from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. It's been a long break, but we're back for you. We're brought to you by AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, your 2014 concealed handgun license headquarters. As always, I'm range operator Jeff Sanford, joined by my cohorts, CHL instructor Gary Montgomery.
Thank you, sir.
And our law enforcement contributors, Jason Berry and his buddy Travis today. Welcome back, fellas.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, good to be here.
If you have questions, comments, you want to get involved in the show, Houston, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. 558-5738. Let's talk all things that go bang. Now, there are alternate ways to get in touch with us. Gary, IT professional, why don't you take over?
Man, you're using that term loosely.
Angry IT professional.
Well, angry's probably right. You can reach us at gunsovertexasradio.com. Jeff's got an email address there that he checks occasionally, Jeff at Guns Over Texas Radio. I can be reached at Gary at Guns Over Texas Radio, and Jason can be reached at Jason at Guns Over Texas Radio if he ever checks his email. We can also be reached at Facebook / Guns Over Texas Radio. That's it.
All right. Okay, so what's new in your gun world this week, fellas?
Before
we get to what's new in your gun world this week, I just want to say I just got back from fishing with my dad and my brother. And I want to give a happy belated birthday to my dad on the air. My dad, Steve Sanford, had his birthday this past weekend, and my brother Mac and I went to Rockport, and we all got to go fishing together, fishing on the pier, and we took a charter boat out, which we do about once every 12 years, and per Sanford custom, we took it out on the nastiest day of the year where the water was so muddy. You couldn't even see your bait once you dipped it in. So, of course, we caught absolutely nothing. But not catching anything, it didn't even bother us because we had a great time as a family. So if you have the opportunity to get out and go do something with your dad, with your brother, to go fishing, just to go hang out and be men for a little while, do it. Take advantage of it. All right. Gary.
Yes.
What's new in your gun world this week?
Not a whole lot new. I did actually complete a review of that PPX, the Walther PPX, and mm-hmm. it was a dog.
Really?
Imagine that. Imagine that. Walther presenting us with an overpriced
piece of junk. It crapped the bed
at
about 2,000 rounds. The big issue that I have with that gun, aside from being a high bore axis and not a really, I'm not sure why they bothered putting a hammer on it. Just should have made it striker fired.
We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, but the key issue with it is there. So the back side of the magazine well has what can be best described as a spine. So you've got like six big voids on the back side of it, and then there's just this little tiny, maybe 3 millimeter wide ridge running down the center of that. Okay. Well, what we discovered was after a number of magazine insertions is that your rounds will start to dig into that little piece of plastic and turn up a burr. And all of a sudden, you can't get the magazine out. But if you do get it out, then you can't get anyone in. And the gun, just you can't feed it. And so, yeah, you can sit there, and we did. We several times, you know, carved that out with a knife or a file and whatnot, and it would just raise it again.
Because field gunsmithing with a pocket knife is the way to go.
Yeah.
Well, especially on a defensive handgun.
And not only that, something else I noticed is that it has a three-piece barrel.
Revolutionary three-piece barrel?
So Truth About Guns actually asked about this, and Walther's absolute BS answer was that, well, single-piece barrels will deform, and so this is a better unit. And I'm going, but you didn't do it in the PPQ or the P99. You did in this piece of crap.
You caught yourself.
Yeah, very good, very good. Now the PPX is, if I remember right, it's just the cheaper model of the PPQ.
It is definitely designed to be a cheap gun.
I think its MSRP is only about $75 less than the PPQ. Yeah, and they have cut about $300 in corners on it.
Yeah, yeah, it is set to retail at $450, and it's probably more like a $200 gun.
Now, the complaint we had when you brought it in last week and we all got to play with it some in here is it does have a hammer on it, right. But it's a two-piece setup, much like an HK LEM. The difference
Almost, but not.
There's a distinct difference, though. Now, on the HK LEM, if for some reason when you're holstering it, if you put your thumb over the back of the hammer and you feel that hammer start to move, you'll know that something is interacting with the trigger and the gun might accidentally go off and you can stop what you're doing, take pressure off of the trigger, and figure out what's wrong. Now, with the PPQ, you put your thumb over the hammer, you start to push the trigger back. The PPX, pardon me. You start to push the trigger back, and your thumb actually stops the trigger, pardon me, stops the hammer from moving.
Right.
But the trigger still continues on to the rear.
Correct.
And it still trips the sear.
Yes.
So what is the point of having a hammer on there if it doesn't stop the trigger from moving?
And not only that, it doesn't have second strike capability.
Okay, let's...
Oh, that's weird.
Exactly.
We all played with it for about 10 minutes and said, this is a piece of move.
Let's play a game of Would You Rather.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Would you rather Walther PPX or Glock?
Oh, a Glock all day long.
Would you rather PPX or Rock Island 1911 unaltered?
Well, it depends. Does the Rock Island run?
Depends.
Yeah. If it all happens to be a Rock Island that runs, I'll take the Rock Island.
You don't know, though. It's a box.
But you don't know that about a PPX anymore.
Either. I know. That's the thing.
Well, I will say this. It did continue to extract and fire and feed as long as you could actually get a magazine and the gun.
And as long as you had a pocket knife, you could continue to fix
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Or if you didn't bother doing any speed reloads or didn't bother training with it hard, it would probably work fine.
It is a gun that is designed to be purchased, fired maybe 50 rounds, and then put away and never used again.
Would you rather PPX 24/7?
24/7.
Wow.
Would you rather?
You know the 24/7 will work because you can shake it and
exactly.
it goes off every time.
I can ninja cock it and ninja fire it. With the safety on.
PPX or High Point?
Ooh. Huh.
Because I have seen High Points that run.
That's the thing.
And that,
really?
Yeah.
I have not.
The problem is that they make keyhole.
Right.
You know, the bullet tumbles like crazy.
I don't know. It's a crapshoot between those two. That would be a coin toss.
Sadly, I have seen a few High Points that run really well. They're big and bulky.
But
and
you know what?
18-pound
trigger.
You could
beat somebody with one.
And
but
to
it worked.
That end, now that you mention it, I probably would go with the High Point because it's cheaper.
You know, I would go with it just because
you can club somebody with it. It's heavier.
Right.
I would go with it just solely for the fact of the turd who's in charge of the marketing department for Walther.
At Walther,
and for refusing to do interviews.
And this is, you know, I actually, when this gun went down, that was a thing. You know, a friend of mine bought it, and when he bought it, I was like, dude, that was a bad idea. And, but I didn't want to crap on his gun in front of him and say, you know, but I said, you know what? Now the gun has crapped the bed. Why don't you give that to me for a couple of days, and we'll work out all that we've seen with
now, it. Now, what is Walther's return policy?
I don't know that Walther has a return policy.
I'd just be curious to see if they're going to fix it.
Is Smith & Wesson still importing all the Walther?
They're out of bed.
No, I think
they're
that's not in bed anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the funny thing I thought, you talk about the three-piece barrel. What they actually did, instead of taking a solid billet of metal and machining it down to the lugs, the barrel, the chambering, and the hood, and all that stuff is one piece, the barrel is one piece.
Yes.
The actual chamber is another piece that's welded onto the barrel.
Yes.
And then the lug is a separate piece that is welded to the bottom of the chamber.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not even clear that they're welded. They may all be press fit for all I can tell. Because it's I can't see any indications that this stuff was welded.
Now, this stuff wasn't MIMMed, was it?
Yes. The chamber area around the so that barrel hood and the lower lugs, that's all metal injection molded.
All right, now, Travis, can you explain why you made that face and that disgusting sound?
Metal MIMMed parts are really good for some things. Like, for example, handcuff keys. A lot are often MIMMed, and they work wonderfully. However, what happens is there's actually pieces of metal.
What if you were firing a bullet out of that handcuff key?
Well, And actually, this wouldn't be the first MIMMed barrel. Smith & Wesson played with some MIMMed barrels on their Bodyguard for a while, but mm-hmm. I think they've stopped that. But what it is there's metal inside of a composite material, and other chemicals are added to it, and it shrinks. It's actually weird, because if you ever see a full mm-hmm. piece before it's been
cooked,
yeah, however right. you want to call it, it's much larger and actually shrinks down, which mm-hmm. is pretty amazing. The great thing about MIM is it's cheaper than milling out of solid billet.
Right.
So any parts that can be MIM'd, they're trying to do that to save money.
Right.
However, there are certain parts of a gun that you probably don't want to do that with. Mm-hmm. And I would say the barrel would probably be pretty
the chamber area.
Would probably be pretty high up on that list.
I'd take MIM sights. I'd take MIM barrel bushing.
Sure.
I'd take a MIM to magazine release. I'd take a MIM safety.
Right.
There's a few things I'd take MIM. The chamber? No.
Probably yeah. not. No. Yeah.
Well,
not as strong.
And yeah. now looking at the construction, the chamber itself is still – it's part of the bore. So that's all one piece. And this looks like a sleeve that is the barrel hood and the lower lugs that are the metal injection molded part around that. So you're still looking at it probably a 2 to 3 millimeter thickness of the bore in that area. That is part of the original turned piece of steel that is the bore.
Okay.
So that's all one piece. But then you've got this thing that slid around it. How that's actually fit, I think it's press fit. I could be wrong, but I don't see any welding marks. Or it may be glued together. I wouldn't surprise
me. I was gonna say, stranger things have happened.
Yes. And then, of course, there is that other piece, the feed ramp on the lip that too looks like it's either press fit or glued in. Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think there's any welding involved in this barrel, quite honestly. Which is, like I said, if you only intend for somebody to put 50 rounds through it, not such a big deal.
And that's the sad thing, is that the last numbers that I had reported, and I heard this from Gordon Carroll, who shoots for Smith & Wesson,
mm-hmm.
said out of all the guns in the United States that are purchased, and, you know, sitting at this table here, we've got four guys who will shoot well into the thousands of rounds mm-hmm. this year very easily. For guys like us, we are the absolute rarity when
yes.
it comes to gun purchases.
Right. Yeah.
The average number of rounds put through each gun that's purchased in the United States.
That's purchased
to
the day
six.
They
yeah.
Seven.
Six?
Or is it down to six?
Seven now?
Yeah. It was seven. Well, so the origin
wow.
of that story that I first heard was Colt was coming out with what became the officer's model.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is the late 70s when they're about to come out with this gun. And they pulled Ken Hackathorn, Bill Wilson, Jim Cirillo, basically a bunch of old school gunfighters, all into a room to say, hey, we're going to come out with this new pistol. And it's going to be designed as a carry gun or a backup gun for cops. You know, they're carrying the 1911 as their primary duty gun. And there was a whole discussion about some features that were not present on that gun. And when the gunfighters in the room all went, well, why would you not have those features? And one of the key features was the little lip at the end of the magazine. If you look on a standard 1911 magazine, there's a lip at the end
right.
of that base plate that you could use to rip the magazine out if
right.
it gets stuck. It's not there on an officer's model. And the engineer said that they didn't put it there, and so the gunfighters are all asking, why not? And the engineer stands up and makes this speech about, well, we know everything there is to know about guns and gun owners, and we know that that's not necessary because, you know, we da-da-da-da. But one of the things we know is that from the time you buy a gun to the day you draw your last breath, that gun will fire seven rounds. And the reason that number is so goofy is because of guys like us in this room that shoot, you know, 30,000 rounds out of one gun and might, you know, and then there's that other guy, the other 99% that buy a gun.
Well, think about it. The guy who goes to Academy and buys his, say, you know, I bought my Mossberg bolt action 308 for deer season.
Mm-hmm.
It already came with a scope mounted on it.
Mm-hmm.
I went out and bought a box of 20 rounds. We
right.
fired 10 rounds to sight it in, and then I fired 2 rounds this deer season. Next year I'll fire 2 rounds.
Right.
So the majority of guns out there are like that, and they really might only shoot 25, 30 rounds in their lifetime.
We might yeah. be up to 8 rounds per gun since the elections of 08
Correct.
And 2012 and
yeah.
the hoarding that's been going on.
Yeah.
So, all right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going right out to the phone line. So if you're on hold, hold on tight just a bit longer. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas.
Take me down to the paradise city where the
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking guns, gear, ammo. Anything you want to talk about today is on the table. Anything that goes bang or related to going bang. So you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Let's head out to Southeast Houston and talk to Al. Al, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you got for us, Al?
Okay, how you guys doing?
We're great. Fire away, buddy.
Okay, well, I've got my renewal application for my concealed handgun license. I got one question. They say among the items required as a CHL 100 training form, it does mean I've got to come out and take a course of any kind.
They did. I don't know if the is your mic on, Gary?
Maybe not. Yeah. No. So, yeah, I thought they'd actually remove that requirement of
Because the CHL 100 is the class completion form.
Right.
So as of September 2013, they weren't doing that anymore.
Now, I know that they had been slow to update all their paperwork.
Correct. When did you get your paperwork, Al? Has it been sitting in a folder for a while in your desk?
Oh, I've had it about 3 weeks now.
Okay. Yeah, I would check with DPS, and they should have given you a contact number, but check with them directly, because my understanding right now is that with CHL renewals, you don't have to come to me or any other instructor to get that done.
There's no more class. I'm just kind of surprised they haven't updated their paperwork yet.
Exactly.
Right.
It's all online now, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's what I wanted to know.
Okay. All right, Al. Thank you, sir.
Okay, y'all have a good day.
Yes, good sir, job being amongst the card-carrying members of Gun Toters in Houston, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right, now let's head out to Folsher for Jack. Jack, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's going on?
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
We are great, sir. Fire away.
Well, I always listen to you guys when I'm on the way home from a National Guard drill. So.
All right, thanks for your service.
Indeed.
And this guy was my last drill, and I went about a month ago to the tactical class that you guys teach. And I wanted to say kudos, because the reason I took it is I was selected to represent the state of Texas on the state marksmanship team that went to the national event.
Ooh, congrats.
Oh, awesome.
Congrats.
And I placed.
Good deal.
So I placed third overall novice. The class was awesome. Maybe not for a beginner, but I'm sure it worked up to it. But when I heard the instructor's credentials, I knew exactly what he was being military. I knew exactly what he was teaching. And it was a great refresher so that when I got to the national event, we were able to put rounds on target.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate that, Jack. Appreciate you coming out and especially giving us a call and having high marks for it. Larry's a heck of an instructor, as you know. Tell us a little bit about your event, though, man. Let's pat yourself on the back for a little bit.
So this is, and I'm an old geezer, right? So I was the old man on the team. I'm a 50-year-old light bird, running around with these youngsters. But I had to alter my kneeling position because I got this little butterball that kind of is hard to kneel around when I want to.
We call that tactical girth, sir.
Tactical girth?
Tactical girth, yes.
So you run, it's called the Wilson Matches. It's one of the four or five national matches. You can work towards your part of it. You can work towards your distinguished in your pistol and rifle, like the CMP, the Civilian Marksmanship Program, does for civilians.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do it in the military and work our way up that way. And two of the guys doubled on the Chief's 50, which is the, you've heard of the President's 100?
Yep.
The Chief's 50 is the Marksmanship Award from the Chief of the National Guard Bureau. He's a four-star general. And two of the guys doubled, both pistol and rifle.
Oh.
And that's the top 23 rifle and the top 23 pistol shooters in the National Guard.
And what'd you get?
In the competition, I was... If you've shot in a national event before, you're in the open category. If this is your first one, you're a novice.
Oh, cool.
So I was competing against the novice guys, and I placed third overall novice.
Well, that's awesome, Jack.
So It was a hoot. It was a blast.
What kind of courses of fire did they have for you?
So it's everything from a CQB. I took third novice in CQB as well. And then you have a lot of team events. So anything from a special zero match where you start at 100 yards and they mark them, and then you move back to 200, 300, 400, and then you're shooting 500 yards with an ACOG.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you're shooting a two-minute of angle rifle with maybe two-minute of angle ammunition in a breeze. So it's, you know, hopefully your sights are on and your hold is steady. So the other stuff is anywhere from 30 yards with a 9mm, the Beretta, mm-hmm. 15 yards out of the holster in 15 seconds with a mag change.
Wow, they actually let the military draw now?
Yeah.
Do you still have to use the flap Widowmaker holster?
Yeah, oh, no, I'm running a Safari Land.
Oh, good man, good man.
Great.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a blast, you know, and it's, you know, you're up from the holster, you pull up, you punch out, five rounds at 15 yards, mag change, five rounds into the next target, and, you know, you work your targets back and forth. There weren't any dual courses, but there were some pivot and turns at 25 yards with an M16A2. Which is a little bit hard to wield.
A little old school, too.
Wow.
That sounds like a blast. Well, Jack, man, we appreciate you giving us a call and talking about the class and, you know, telling us about what you went through and placing, getting third place in novice. That's awesome. And we appreciate your service. And I tell you what, next time you're in the Houston area on a Wednesday night, give me a call and let me know, and I'll put you down on that list to take Larry's class again if you'd like, and you can do it on the house as a congratulations for your third place finish.
You guys are awesome, and, you know, I definitely will take it again. And I'm going to drag my friends out as well.
All right, man. We appreciate it, Jack. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now let's head out to Ben in Southeast Houston. Ben, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Hi, guys. Have you guys had any experience with the 6-hour P224?
I've had some experience with it. I've shot a number of them. And, you know, I like them. They don't have a full grip. That's kind of hard to get used to if you're shooting it one-handed. Mm-hmm. But if you get both hands on the gun, your pinky finger on your strong side hand or your master side hand ends up becoming basically the grip, the bottom of the grip that the gun mm-hmm. is lacking. They shoot really nice because they're heavy, but I have a hard time getting around. Why would I carry that if I could carry, say, a Glock 19 in a package that's mm-hmm. very similar in size?
Yeah, I was going to say that this is an answer that SIG has to a question that's been asked a long time about interchangeable magazine systems with right. their compacts. Now, there's a lot of large agencies out there, a lot of Fed agencies out there. They'll issue the SIG, and their compact pistol is a 239, which is a single-stack pistol, and it's really not any smaller than the 229. Mm-hmm. So a lot of agencies have gone to Glocks and to M&Ps because they can have an interchangeability of holsters, interchangeability of magazines, mm-hmm. interchangeability of parts. SIG is really late to the party because they finally decided, man, all these other agencies are going in droves to these other pistols that are all a pistol system that has interchangeable right. parts. So SIG said, you know what, we'll chop down the 229, and then it can have interchangeable grips, interchangeable holsters, interchangeable parts. The problem is they're about 15 or 20 years late to that party. And it's not a bad gun, and it's not a bad design, but in the grand scheme of things, other people have been doing it for so long and have taken that big chunk of market away from them that they're really playing catch up with that.
Right.
And the fact that it's an all-metal pistol, even though it's aluminum and not that heavy, the polymer pistols seem to rule in the compact world and not so much a gun that weighs as much as it does. It's not a bad gun. It runs. But for the size and the cost, if an agency's going to go out and buy 5,000 pistols, they can get the Glocks for $200 a piece cheaper when you're buying 5,000 of them.
Well,
that
the
up.
Advantage of the polymer pistols is that most of them have interchangeable grip panels and that sort of thing that allows mm-hmm. them to be fitted for different size officers.
And yeah. if I carried a 229 every day, I could not see myself going, oh, well, I'm fixing to run to the store. Let me put on my 224 instead of my 229. There's just not enough of a difference between the two guns to justify it.
And I've said the same thing with the 239 back when I had that option as a carry option. When you hold up the 239 and the 229 side by side, dimensionally, they're within an eighth of an inch on almost every dimension. The only difference is the grip is narrower because you go from a double stack to a single stack. Mm-hmm. Slides the same thickness.
Yeah.
The height is almost the same. The barrel length is within a quarter inch of each other. You're really not getting anything but lower capacity.
Yeah.
So I was not a fan of the 239.
So which one was equivalent to it? A Glock, what was it?
A Glock 26 would be the equivalent or an M&P compact. There's nothing at all wrong with your pistol. your pistol will run. It'll serve you well. The only thing is that for large agency contracts, that's the reason that SIG designed this gun, and they're way late to the party on doing that.
Do you already have one, or are you looking
to get one? No, I want to buy one. Okay. I want to buy one.
Yeah, if you're looking to buy one, then definitely consider the Glock 26 or
M&P Compact or the Shield.
And you could buy two of either of those.
Well, the first thing is to ask is, do you already own a SIG P229?
I had a 226.
The magazines won't interchange then at that point anyway, so you wouldn't be getting the benefit of... If you said, I already own a 229, I've already got 10 magazines and holsters, then it'd be a different story. Yeah, you've already got all the support gear to go with it. If you don't already have that supply train in place, it doesn't make as much sense.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. No problem.
All right, good luck, Ben. All right. So, Jason, anything new with you lately?
Yeah, new in my gun world for this week is I finally got my first NFA stamp back from the ATF.
Woohoo! It's your first one?
My first one, yes. But
I
I've been doing
this back
this
week.
But how?
I don't have any back this week. I'm at 5 months.
But well, we checked the dates on ours, Jeff, and our dates for submission were one day apart. And mine came back and yours didn't.
And so that equals 1 month apart in, I guess, ATF time.
Well, no, I actually submitted within a day of each other. I submitted one by mail and I submitted one by e-form. The e-form came back in 5.5 months.
Yeah.
I called about the hard form I sent in. They originally told me 9 months. The second time I called in around February, they said it was up to 12 months. Ooh. And then when I called back last week, they said it was up to 14 or 15 months.
Wow.
And I was like,
call one more time and they'll tell you before you're dead.
So I'm glad one pushed through, but apparently, yeah, they keep moving me to the bottom of the stack every time I call.
Because you keep calling.
You keep calling. E-forms is definitely the way to go. I sent in a whole bunch.
But e-forms has crashed at this point and won't accept anything.
Well
it's repeatedly crashed and repeatedly been repaired.
Well, when I went online the other day to print out my new stamp, because you were supposed to click on the link and go to it, of course it was down. So I have the email saying my stamp is approved, but I haven't been able to print it out.
Wow, you got an email? I did not.
Yeah, I got it. That's all I have. Apparently with e-forms, you don't get
you
the hard copy
stamp. You guys are working with the government. What do you expect?
Well, you know what? I got two suppressors, and they gave them to me at the store, and I was just and they let me walk out with them, so I was pretty happy. I was like, good enough! I'm out of here!
As long as the ATF didn't knock on your door, you'll be good.
Paperwork?
Yeah.
No, they actually printed up copies and handed them to me. It was kind of weird because I'm used to the green tax stamp up in the corner. It looks very official. It's like, wow, that's my $200 right there. And now it's just
an email with a barcode.
Yeah, well, it's just a poorly printed piece of paper. I was like, that's not nearly as cool, but whatever.
Yeah, well, I got to crank that out. And then still the last step after that is I've got to go and get the engraving done. And Sean Cody hooked me up with NFA Investments out in Conroe, so I'll hopefully get with them next week and get everything all engraved and taken care of.
So you're getting you got one SBR stamp.
Back. One SBR stamp. Yes.
Okay, so what did you get SBR'd?
Huh?
What was it?
Well, I did one Colt and one Palmetto State, and the Colt is going to be in limbo for another year apparently because that's the one I mailed in, and then I did the Palmetto as an afterthought of, if I'm doing one, I might as well do another one, and sure enough, the Palmetto came through quick, and I've already got a 10.5 inch upper from FN for the top of it, and ready to rock.
Already got it. You didn't get that until you had the tax stamp, though, correct?
Of course not, because that would have been constructive intent.
Possession.
Actually, it wouldn't matter because I already had a registered lower from my issued gun.
Okay. There's a lot of misinformation there about the getting engraving. Do you want to explain to listeners why and what you
Once you have your tax stamp done, you have basically manufactured a rifle. You've manufactured a short-barreled rifle, and even though all it is pushing in two pins on the top of an upper receiver, as a manufacturer now you have to have your name – the name of your trust or your name, whatever name is on the form one that you filled out, has to be engraved on the side of the gun. And there's certain restrictions about how high and how deep it has to be engraved in the weapon. But basically, I have the name of my trust in Houston, Texas, engraved on the side of the gun. And then it will all be official and pretty and legal.
Correct.
So, but if you bought one from the factory, if you bought a short-barreled rifle direct from Colt, direct from FN or whoever it was that was going to manufacture it, then you wouldn't have to have it engraved because you are not the manufacturer. You are simply the purchaser at that point.
Very good. Good.
So keep that in mind when all your stamps come in.
Now, there is one
in just six short years.
There is one other mistake I've seen about the engraving is it used to be guys would take their ARs, take off the pistol, the grip, have it engraved underneath, and put the grip back on.
No, it has to be in a conspicuous place.
Correct.
Because the other thing would have been when you crack it in half along the top of the receiver, like where you drop the parts in, they were doing it along there. So I've been told that it has to be exposed.
Yes. Correct.
Mm-hmm. So what did you get back, Travis?
I got two suppressors. I got a Thunder Beast 30P1.
I have heard lots of good things about the Thunder Beast.
Well, I actually just did an article reviewing one, and the first thing was the great thing about the Thunder Beast is that it is for very accurate rifles, mm-hmm. and will not screw up the accuracy. People don't realize, but suppressors usually do affect the accuracy.
Yes.
Yeah, in a negative manner. The Thunder Beast doesn't, and I didn't have an accurate enough gun, so I talked to a buddy of mine. We went out, and he had Scout Supply Rifles had built him a rifle just pretty much for this test, and we went out and was very, very impressed with it.
Yeah.
It was shooting 3/8-inch groups at 100 yards,
yep.
and then
when I've heard, yeah.
Every time you put – the funny thing was I put the suppressor on it, and all the groups got better. So I called up Thunder Beast, and I was like, okay, how is it your suppressor would make a gun more accurate? And Zach Smith at Thunder Beast gave me a really nice interview, and he said, you know what? It can't. He says, it's a fallacy. There is no way a suppressor can make a gun more accurate. It just cannot be done. However, lots of people shoot guns with a really good suppressor like that more accurately. And he says the reason is there's a lot less felt recoil. Mm-hmm. There's a lot less
bang. Flinch.
He says most people, 9 out of 10 people, will shoot that gun better with
because
the suppressor.
It's suppressed.
And I would say the same thing. When we finally shot that the 300 Win Mag out mm-hmm. at Mazunga Ranch, mm-hmm. I mean, the thing probably weighed 10 pounds unloaded anyway before he put the suppressor on it, but
right.
it was a kitten to shoot. It really wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was amazed. I went to a 308, decent recoil on it, and then you throw that on there, and it was like shooting a 223. I mean, there was nothing. It was really fun to shoot.
Wow. Jeff, you want to tell us about your new suppressors? Oh, wait. And the cheap shot, I had to take it.
You will not be playing with them when they come in. We're going to have a party in the range, and you'll be sitting outside on the porch.
After he lets you fondle the never mind.
But, Houston, if you want to get involved in Guns Over Texas, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. But for this moment, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston, with the most eclectic bumper music of any radio show in town.
And I was going to complain because she said it was just going to be Jody's Choice today.
Am I on? There we go. I was going to complain because all she said was it would be Jody's Choice, and we had no clue what the bumper music was.
And you thought that meant the Village People.
I was afraid, but I have been... I regret anything I might have said, Miss Jody. You're doing wonderful bumper music.
Now she's going to play the Village People for you.
Well, we started with Queen. We started with Queen, and now we're going to the Village People or whatever. So I see a certain
pattern
theme. Yeah, and I can see why you appreciate it. So yes,
well, yes, you and your merch, Jason.
I gotta be me. What can I say?
It's not a purse. It's a tactical attaché.
No, it was a merch.
It's the fringe. Once you get fringe, it's got the worst.
All right, so Travis,
no.
We were talking about your Houston, questions, comments, you want to get involved in the show, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. All right, now, Travis, we were talking about you just got a Thunder Beast.
Yes.
And then
Thunder Beast suppressor, yes.
What was the other suppressor that you just got your stamp bag for?
An ISIS II, which is a 45 caliber suppressor, and it's made by Thompson. Who is it made by? Thompson Machine, I think, out of Florida.
You'd know better than I would.
I'm trying to remember.
I've had a guy come in with one of those, and it was. I don't know. I don't think it was the ISIS II, but it was a Thompson. Would you say Thompson Machine?
Thompson Machine, I believe, is the company.
And it was cheap. I think he only paid like $200 or $295.
I got ripped off then.
It.
Not the first time.
No. The other guys was made by the Thompson Twins.
Totally different. Totally different.
Totally different guys.
But actually, I'm doing a review on that one for an upcoming article. But the guys there at Thompson Machine, they were really nice. They sent me some different adapters so I can put them on different pistols. And their big thing, he said, try them out on everything from a 22 to a 45 and just see how you like it. And I was like, oh, I'll try it. You know, it can't be that great on different mm-hmm. calibers, but it sounds kind of cool. I did see that I'm trying to remember that Brooks is the gentleman I've been talking to there. He has some YouTube videos where he's taken the suppressor and put it on rifles and gone out and tested it on, say, a 223, an mm-hmm. AK, all kinds of – and – in the videos, it does not blow up in his face, which I thought was really awesome. I watched the videos, but I'm not that gutsy that I will be going out there and screwing that thing.
It's only gas.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
We'd heard from another manufacturer. I don't know if we should mention it because I don't know if they're allowed to say it, but we'd heard others out there are looking to make a 9mm suppressor that can be used for 30 caliber rifle and .223. So,
now, who is that? Say it. Who cares?
Templar.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
He said that, but I didn't know if they wanted to say it on air because I didn't know if he had done it yet. But, and it sounds like a great idea, and it would be the great one can to rule them all.
Right.
But then again, my thought was if you have to make it beefy enough to handle 30 caliber rifle, that's right. going to be a heavy can on the end of a pistol.
Right. First thing you got to do is you got to make sure that you use titanium.
Templar uses titanium.
Yeah. All titanium.
Even the baffles and everything?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
It's a solid one-piece monocore. He doesn't weld the titanium. He makes a nice can.
Cool.
They're proud of it, but it is a nice quality piece.
Now, is it one of those that you can take apart and clean it, or is it
all? I
don't
think it's serviceable at all. I don't think.
You just replace the baffle when they need to be replaced. You just bring it into them, and they replace it for you if you ever shoot it out.
Yeah, and he's got his own custom mount on the front there that acts as a sacrificial baffle.
Okay, so that's the one that gets eaten up or beat up, however you want to call it.
Yep. Yeah. Jeff has several of those, but nothing to screw onto them. It's too easy. I haven't even ordered my suppressor yet.
I have several of those. I've got them in 5.56. I've got them in 300 blackout. You know, 308. Nothing to put them on. All right. Let's head out to the phone lines and talk to David and Tom Ball. David, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
Well, sir, I'm a locksmith here in Houston. And I made a call in one of the villages off of Interstate 10 and ran into a police officer by the name of Steve, who I believe is the owner of Shiloh Gun Range. Is that correct?
Yep.
That would be your dad, Jeff.
That's him. Mm-hmm. The one and only.
Yeah. He and I had a conversation. He suggested I call in and tell you about it, and I had a question at the end. Back when dinosaurs ruled the earth, I was a police officer in Silsbee, Texas, back in the 80s.
Cool.
And that was back when Second Chance Body Armor was still in business.
Oh, the guy was running around shooting himself to do demonstrations?
Indeed.
Yes, I remember those. I remember that very well.
You got to believe in your product, man.
I don't need to believe in it that much.
Well, in those days, you could send in a card, and they'd send you back a book describing some of the saves with their vest, and they'd send you a patch of the vest and recommended that you shoot it to prove to yourself that it would resist bullets.
Uh-huh.
So, my sergeant and I went to the pistol range with a Houston phone book and a patch of this vest. And he carried a 38 with a 3-inch barrel and had it loaded with plus P 38 caliber bullets. And I carried a Dan Wesson with a 6-inch barrel loaded with Winchester Western Silver Tip hollow points.
Hmm.
All right.
So we put the patch on the book. My supervisor, Ronnie, shot it. It popped off the phone book and landed in the grass. We picked it up, spread it out. Picked the bullet off the first layer of fabric. It just kind of made a dimple in the fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So that's impressive. We thought that was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
So I pointed that Dan Wesson down there with a 6-inch barrel and ripped off a rim, and it buried that piece of patch of vest right down into the center of
dirt.
The home.
Yeah. Dig that out.
We had to dig it out. It tore up the first four or five layers of the vest, and but it stopped the bullet.
Well, yeah, but if it would have stopped the bullet that deep into you with all the pulling the rest of the vest with it.
Yeah, we're not discussing blunt force trauma, just penetration at this point. But anyway, your dad told me, or Steve told me, that there's federal regulations now that there's a maximum amount of penetration that a police officer's bullet can have.
The NIJ standards.
NIJ testing protocol. I actually did an article on this a couple of months ago and talked to NIJ and interviewed them. NIJ has updated their standards periodically. They were supposed to do it every year, but that it usually takes about 3 years, 4 or 5 years, depending. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you remember recently, 2-3 years ago, there was a big recall of vests because this new stuff called Spectra all just pooped the bed. And the problem was that it was awesome when it came out of the factory, but after about 6 months or a year of people sweating in it, it just
and the heat
down.
Of the trunk of the car, too.
And all that kind of stuff. So NIJ changed their policy after that. So the way that it is tested now is it gets put into extreme heats and colds. It gets thrown in a tumbler, which is just like a giant dryer. And it just gets tumbled and tumbled and tumbled and tumbled, and then it gets submerged in water. And all of this is supposed to simulate what it's going to happen to it as the life of the vest goes, as you're wearing it. And then it gets tested. Now, the way that it's tested is it's put up against a piece of clay, and it's shot. Now, not only does it have to stop the round, the deformation in the clay is also measured. There's very strict protocol. They scrape away the little bump around the edge of the circle, and then they measure the depth, and it cannot be more than a certain depth, and I forget what exactly that is. But so even there's lots of stuff out there that is really super thin that will stop around. However, it would push right through.
Right.
So it's got to be able to stop the blunt force trauma as well as stop the round, which is why bulletproof vests from the 1980s and bulletproof vests today are still really thick.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to be able to get away from that. I mean, that's one of the things.
Yeah, you have to have somewhere to spread that impact out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What about inserts, ceramic or steel inserts?
Chicken plates.
They make a lot of great inserts. There's always been the fear that a bullet will ricochet off the insert and run right up into your chin.
Yeah, we had to get rid of all the steel plates in our vest. We were actually told to not throw them away, but I'll hand them into the main armory. And they were afraid that when the bullet hit, it would shatter like it does when you shoot a steel plate.
Right. And it
does. That little fragments of the pieces would go up, and you'd just get hit with little pieces of jacket and stuff in the throat, and that would be just as bad as, you know, anything else. So.
And there may be some truth to that. I don't know if it ever...
So now we have soft trauma packs instead of hard plate.
The only bad thing about when you go from the steel to the ceramic is the steel is about 1/8 inch thick, and the ceramic is anywhere from an inch and a quarter to 2.5. and it, you end up, it's great when you're wearing those and you lay down on the ground to shoot prone. We call it turtling. especially if you have that ballistic girth already, it really becomes hard to get down low. Mm-hmm. But those plates do a great job because what they'll do is they'll take a vest that just would stop pistol rounds. You can slap that in there, and now they'll stop up to .308 armor piercing. Most SWAT teams and guys like that, and even a lot of uniform cops now are wearing those.
Mm-hmm. Did I hear one of you refer to them as chicken plates?
That would be me. That was how I was first introduced to them.
I had never heard that before. That's a new one on me, too. Sorry.
It was a cop who told me that.
Enjoyed it very much.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks a lot for calling, David. We appreciate it. And, you know, we tell people, I meet people all the time, tell them, give us a call on the show, ask your questions. And it rarely happens. So, David, thanks for meeting the old man and taking his advice and giving us a call. We appreciate that. Mm-hmm. All right, let's head out to Garden Oaks and talk to Philip. Philip, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
Yes, sir. I got a couple of 1911 questions. I have a lightweight Commander I've had a long time, and the frame's gotten all beat up where the recoil spring rod keeps in it.
Has it cracked, or is it just kind of been peened out?
It's been peened out pretty bad. And I bought this thing used, and looking at it, it looks like it might have had the dust cover repaired at one time also.
Well, you know, that's one of the areas where that gun famously develops a crack.
Right.
So it is possible. Without looking at the gun, I couldn't tell you, but I've heard of people who tried to TIG weld that to
I was going
to
say, is this aluminum or steel, Commander?
It's aluminum.
Aluminum.
Yeah. The earliest commanders, they didn't designate a difference. The earliest ones were aluminum frames.
I know one is the combat commander and one's the commander, and I can't remember which one's aluminum and which one's steel.
They introduced the combat commander, which is the all-steel gun.
Okay, I knew one of them was different. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, and so these days, if they call it a lightweight, it is an aluminum, but if it's early enough, say 1950s, late 50s, early 60s, mm-hmm. then it will be a just a straight commander, but even those have aluminum frames. But if it's peened out, the reality is that you may have reached the end of the service life of that gun.
Yeah. The one thing I was thinking two ways, like you said, trying to get it pigged and machined or sending mm-hmm. it back to Colca. I hear they will replace the frame, re-serial number with the same numbers and all that. Oh, my hell with that.
They couldn't hurt actually, to ask. They can do that. I've forgotten what the fee is. I actually knew the number off the top of my head at one point. But, yes, you can contact Colt and tell them that you'd like to replace the frame, and they can do that for you and give you the same serial number.
I might do it that way with it. And my other question was, did something, I've been catching hell for this. I did something I said I'd never do. I bought a Taurus.
Yeah, we're going to give you something for that one.
Yeah, but it is a stainless 1911 9mm. I've been wanting a 9mm
1911. Yeah, and that's a fun, you know, fun a 9mm 1911 is a fun gun to shoot.
Yeah, it came with a set of VZ.
VZ grips?
Grinsom Trace VZ grips on it.
Oh.
Nice grips.
Yeah, well, I'm not a laser guy, so I'm thinking I can probably...
You can probably sell those for a tidy little profit. VZ Grips makes a standard VZ standard Makarta grip,
right.
And I run those on several of my 1911s, and I like them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's an aggressive texture.
I got a pair on a Rock Island Tactical VZ.
Yeah,
I'll be curious to hear how it ends up running, because I've seen two or three Taurus 1911s that ran really well, and I've seen one that wouldn't get through a single magazine
Jesse
without
Duff
doing it.
Was at
hers is not a stock Taurus 1911.
I'm just saying.
There is no part in there that came from the Taurus factory
won a
except the slide and the frame.
A Taurus 1911 this past weekend.
And again, slide and frame are from Taurus. Everything else is Wilson or Ed Brown. I guarantee it.
Oh, probably so. I don't doubt it.
Yeah. Well, the thing on this one, I picked it up used. It's got a Kimber 7-round mag in it. It wouldn't hold just, you know, fiddling with, I haven't shot it yet, just fiddling with it, it wouldn't hold the slide back. I squeezed the sides of the magazine because it looked like the follower was just rattling around in there, and now it holds the slide back. So I definitely want to get some magazine. What do you recommend? I was thinking the Wilson.
Wilson makes a nice 9mm 38 Super magazine, as does
Chip McCormick.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of success with Chip McCormick 9mm. But Dawson Precision
I've only had
here
them
in Texas.
So.
Dawson Precision, if you look them up, he makes a 9mm magazine for the 1911. And I've had good luck with that. But the Wilson, the cool thing about the Wilson is it's also a 38 Super Mag. So if you decide to drop a 38 Super Barrel in it, you've got a magazine already that can do both.
Okay. All right. I was thinking the Wilson.
Yeah.
Some of the other 1911s I shoot. I got some McCormick and some Metal Forms and
mm-hmm.
McGar,
Metal Form,
PPs, they all seem to be working.
Yeah, and 9mm Metal Form was making a run for a while. I don't know if they're still doing it. The only thing about the Wilsons, they can be hard to come by because for a while he would only do a short run of them. And then, you know, wouldn't make them again for like a year.
I know a shop that has some Wilson 9mm mags.
And who would that be?
Shiloh Shooting Range.
There you go.
You have some. Okay. All right. Okay. I was running around yesterday just poking around a few different shops, seeing if anybody had any on the shelf, and I should have gone out there and got them and shot. I don't know why I didn't.
No problem. Now, dimensionally, there are some minor dimensional differences between a 9mm slide stop, a 40 slide stop, a 45 slide stop.
Yes.
The thing is, did Taurus cut corners and make one slide stop across the board, or are they dimensionally machined that one slide stop for the 9mm round? You could go online and find a Wilson or an Ed Brown 9mm slide stop, preferably Wilson, because that dimension will be set to go with the Wilson mags that are going in it.
Right.
Matching the mags to the slide stop helps cure a lot of ills in a 1911.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sounds good. Hey, one other quick question on Wilson. One of the shops I was at, I was looking at their used guns, and they had a Wilson 1911,
mm-hmm.
and it had $1,000 on it.
Hmm.
I said, let me look at that, you know. And I'm looking at it, and it took me a minute. I dropped the magazine out, and I went, huh, this is a double stack.
Ah,
it's a polymer
probably a
KZ-45.
Lower.
Yeah, it's a polymer lower.
Yeah. And the KZ-45.
The bull.
We were just talking
about
it.
It's an Israeli bull with a Wilson slide on it.
Yes, it is basically an Israeli lower, depending on the age, because like I said, both Kimber and Wilson eventually just plain copied the gun, mm-hmm. as opposed to actually having Bull manufacture it. So depending on its
age. And why is it no longer in their catalog?
Well, when they made the copy of it, it didn't work.
It yeah. pooped the bed quite regularly. Yes. And the other thought would right. be, if I saw a Wilson gun on the shelf for $1,000,
yeah.
I'd think, who destroyed it with a Dremel tool?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there has to be a reason yeah. it's that cheap.
But in the KZ-45's defense, the first few copies of that gun that I saw that were, honest to goodness, bull frames, they did run.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing I thought. Why is this Wilson $1,000?
Yeah, because it's not really a Wilson. That's why.
Okay. All right. Hey, well, I'll be out there to get some mags as soon as I can.
All right,
Philip. Thank you for calling. We appreciate you giving us a call and talking to us at Guns Over Texas. Houston, that music means that our first hour is down and our second hour is coming up just around the corner. Hold on tight. We've got more Guns Over Texas coming your way.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas. Jeff, Gary, Jason, special guest Travis all in studio today. If you have any questions, comments, you want to get involved, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738.
Hey, let me give that quick shout out to the Pacific Northwest. Apparently, we do have listeners cranking to us in Oregon. We've got Amy and Aaron up there and a couple of others. They're having a little listening party, and we just wanted to give a shout out and say thanks.
What are they doing during the show?
Cranking one out is what he said, I believe.
Did that come out that way? I meant to say cranking it up, as in the radio. Well, okay, a little Freudian slip there, but thanks for listening up there.
Because he was thinking of Amy at the time. Remember?
It's nice to have coast-to-coast internet radio listeners. All right, that was the point. Let's get back to guns, damn it.
All right, so one of our callers, David and Tomball, called and talked a little bit about bulletproof vests. There was a, let me just say, if it's 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, I got it. I had somebody get mad at me because I posted the article about this. She got upset and said that it was wrong that I joked about the fact that.
Tell her to shut up. Yeah. If it's 2:30 in the morning.
Gene pool's a little bit cleaner, that's all I said.
If it's 2:30 in the morning and you and 8 to 10 of your good buddies have probably been drinking, and by the looks of the mugshots, doing a little meth, too.
They go great together.
Felony stupid. Yes.
You should probably not put on a bulletproof vest and give a gun to a known felon and tell him to shoot you.
That was a chick.
Well, oh, no, this just came out. It wasn't the girl. She was taking the rap for her felon boyfriend.
Who wasn't allowed to possess a firearm, much less be shooting it at people.
Well, as you can imagine, the illicit substances that they were on that evening at 2:30 in the morning, whatever they may be, and target practice do not go hand in hand, especially when shooting at a human being. So needless to say.
So the bullet worked as advertised when it missed the vest?
It did.
Another good bullet.
The vest was not put to the test because the felon missed.
So that vest is still in pristine condition and possibly available for sale.
You know, this reminds me of a recent video by Larry Vickers, where he is allegedly testing with some Soviet guys, former Soviet. Yeah.
I saw this, yes.
Yes, and the drill that they do involves something similar, where you know, he takes a round. I don't know if it's Vickers that takes a round to the chest, but it was somebody else takes.
Vickers actually gets it done at the end and says, we would never do that test.
Yeah.
But yeah, they start the test off. The guy that's going to be shooting stands there, takes two rounds to the chest, but he's, you know, wearing a vest, and then goes and does his
and
drill.
Returns fire
right
over the head and shoulder of the guy who just shot him.
Yes. So stupid. So stupid.
They call it stress inoculation. So you know that if you're shot in the vest, you know, hey, I can take this and keep going. I understand the concept, but I would not do it.
Yeah, because what's going to say that he's not going to take one to the chest and then turn around and shoot the guy in the back of the head that just shot him because he just took one to the chest?
Here's the thing. I know some really, really good shooters. Really good shooters. And I love them to death like brothers and sisters. But you know what? Everybody's got a bad day.
That's right.
There's no way in the world I'm going to let any of them launch a bullet in my direction, let alone at me. And trust that.
And we also know that bulletproof vests are designed to soak up a certain number of rounds.
And bulletproof
bulletproof vests are designed to soak up. They're not resistant forever, as in they might take 3 or 4 or maybe even 5 or 6. But after about 5 or 6, guess what? The elasticity and all that is.
I think you're missing the really important thing. The elephant in the room. That vest was made in Russia.
Right.
By Russians.
Russian craftsmanship.
Hey.
Or as Jeff's favorite line, fine Turkish craftsmanship. But that'll segue into something else here, right?
Yeah. Will it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Travis.
Yes.
No?
Travis. Oh. No. You don't want to get into the... Yeah.
Well, I've got a couple of different Turkish shotgun stories.
That's right. The Turkish shotgun. Yeah. I think I'd rather talk about the Sphinx, though. Well, okay. Let's talk both of them, but let's get through the first one kind of. Let's try to go through fairly quickly.
All right.
I really would say let's pass on the Turkish gun because, you know, Travis gives some incredible reviews. But the reason that I want to hear
Have you ever read any of my reviews?
I have listened to your reviews, and that's enough. I can only imagine that your writing is just as good, if not better. You paint a very eloquent picture with your words. I can only imagine what you do when writing. Okay, so I've had a large number of Turkish-made guns getting shipped to the range on transfers because you can get them for like $1.99 and... free magazines with shipping from Bud's Gun Shop. Okay, so.
And they even send a small Turkish girl with them.
Or boy in your case.
I was saying, very, very small hands. Yes.
So, tell us what you got here.
Well, I can start off with my first Turkish shotgun story. Had a couple of buddies that were stationed over in Turkey, and they said, hey, do you want this shotgun? We don't even know how to pronounce it. It's spelled...
Sarsalman?
Spelled H-U-G-L-U. Hulu, actually, turns out to be the correct pronunciation. So I ended up a couple of buddies that we all ordered up shotguns. We got them super cheap, shipped over, all that. Beautiful over-unders, really nice wood, everything. And I started shooting sporting clays with mine. And I actually took it to right here in town to Briley and I said, hey, I need the shotgun stock bent. And so and they did it, and they did an awesome job.
Wait, Briley, you needed it bent, as in bent to go back to straight?
No, actually, I needed it to have cast off because I'm right hand, not cast on, but cast off.
Okay.
And I think I had them drop it just ever so slightly.
Ah.
And they did a perfect job. They did. They came out, and the guys sat there, and they worked with me. Hey, this is what's going to fit you, and all that. I got shout out to Briley. They did an awesome job. And then I went out and I shot with it. And then one day it went click instead of bang. And so I reloaded it and it went click instead of bang. And then I reloaded it again. And then both barrels fired at the same time.
Hmm.
And I can't tell you exactly what I said. But my wife was standing next to me and she thought it was funny. And I'm always embarrassed when I cry in public. but eventually I mopped up the tears and I took it back to Briley and I said, hey, this shotgun has a problem. And again, they were very nice and they pulled out a very long piece of paper that had a bunch of different names of Turkish shotguns on it. And they said, these are the manufacturers that we don't work on.
Mm.
And I said, you know, I appreciate that. What about mine? Can you fix mine? And I said, buddy, I can fix yours. I can go in there and I can change out the part. But the fact is, those guns, the metal is so soft inside of them. That piece that I fix, that'll be fixed. But there's other parts that are already wearing out. And by the time you take it back out and you shoot 50 more shells through it, that part will wear out. And then another part will wear out. And he said, you have a beautiful wall hanger. Take it home and hang it on the wall. And really, that's exactly what it is. I think the Turkish shotguns, they've got some great manufacturing stuff going there, but they really haven't fine-tuned some of the internal parts and the steel hardening and stuff like that.
If you keep doing stuff like telling the truth, they're not going to let you review more guns.
So Right now I'm reviewing another Turkish shotgun. I'm not going to say the name, but I got to shoot it yesterday. Well, let me give a quick shout-out. TNOA, Texas Narcotics Officers Association, had a three-gun match yesterday. There's a great organization, great group of guys. They had run a very professional competition. You know it was professional because I did not win. no matter how much I tried to bribe them, I still came in like right in the middle of the pack. So, but whatever.
Having been your match partner at several matches now, I'm not shocked at all.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, we're neck and neck every time.
Hey.
So.
All right, well.
We're never at the bottom, but we're never quite at the top.
17th place is good for me.
Hey, but it was out of thousands.
Yes.
Thousands.
I thought it was out of 19.
Whatever. So anyway, I have this Turkish shotgun out there yesterday, and they clearly have modeled it after the 870. Mm-hmm. All the controls look like the 870. It's stainless, and it's $200, which tells you...
Stainless and $200. Wow.
Somebody said, is it really stainless or is it painted stainless? And I said, yes. But the interesting part about it was they took the fore end and they had molded a Picatinny rail onto the very front of the pump. And I tried something like this many years ago when lights were first being thrown onto rifles and long arms, and I took a short piece of Picatinny and I put it onto the pump of an 870, and I put a light on there, and I put my thumb up there to turn the light on, and then I fired the gun. And again, I'm embarrassed crying in public, but I did, and I did for a long time because my thumb actually used to be twice as long as it is right now, and it just jammed it clear down into my to my arm, and it really hurt bad, and I was reminded of that yesterday. I didn't have a light on the little Picatinny, but my thumb was kind of resting on that Picatinny, and as the guys here can attest, there's a large chunk
missing
out of my thumb
that
I'm sure it'll grow back.
Not really.
Probably not. But, yeah, there's one place you don't want to mount a light and you don't want to put any accoutrements or attach anything to, and that is the pump on a shotgun where your hand rests because they have quite a bit of recoil. But other than that, it's a fine Turkish shotgun. And if you ever read the review I do of it, you probably will not see anything mentioned about the chunk out of my thumb. Or the fact that I bled all over the gun for an hour.
Now, I've had a few Turkish-made 1911s come in.
Okay.
I think they're like $399 or something on Buds. And that's so close to the price of a Rock Island. I don't understand. Just get the Rock Island if you're in a budget for the 1911. Because this, okay, you know how Matchbox cars...
Yes.
There are the cars that are just the standard cars, mm-hmm. and you know, the pot metal cars. And then they have the ones that are a little bit bigger and a little bit nicer and, like, nicer metal. Well, mm-hmm. the 1911s are made out of the cheaper ones.
In other words, they're made like a High Point.
They make High Point the metal seem like...
Really no, a High Point is made the same way they make a Hot Wheels car, so that's what...
it seems even better than those.
Wow,
so.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, man, and I'm seeing a lot of these guns coming in, so they must be dirt cheap. But, yeah, it's one of those things you just pick them up and you go, oh, God, why? You know, so I'm glad to know that you know, that Briley even said that it's very soft metal,
you know,
and they don't want to work with them.
That was the first person, that was the first group that, and I've had great experiences at Briley. I go in there, I pick up their shotguns, I look at the shotguns they're selling in there, I realize I can't afford them without selling, you know, one of my kids, and I put them back down. But they let me come in and drool over their stock, and they're always been very polite, and even though they know I have no money, they can tell. You know, when I drive up and they see my car, they're like, he has no money. They still take the time. They're very nice. They and to sit down and explain and say, look, the reason your shotgun is a POS is because of this. And they were, and I appreciated their honesty. I really did.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get away from this type of firearm, the fine Turkish craftsmanship, and let's talk about
the polished turd.
You can put a high sheen on it.
Now, let's talk about the Sphinx, which is a Swiss manufacturer.
That's
right?
Correct. That is correct.
Now, the Sphinx, it's been known as a very, very nice shooting gun, but they've just started being imported into the United States, correct?
Well, actually, they've been imported for over 10 years now, only to the competitive market, really. Their guns were around $3,000, and you were looking at usually over a year waiting period to get one. And
you think the only
and the thing is, you didn't see them a lot there. You just don't see a lot of
Even the competitors didn't. There was very few of them.
Yeah,
there was one importer that I knew of, and I think he was in Montana or something like that. Because a good friend of the show, Chris Wiggins, who's got his own gun show up in Colorado, he had been this about 4 years ago, I guess. I found a Sphinx, and he wanted to trade for it. And so I told Chris about it because I didn't have the gun. And so he traded him a brand new P226 Stainless Elite for the Sphinx. I can't remember the model designation. It was a full-size Sphinx, and it was kind of this
Sphinx 3000. There was only one.
Really, really cool-looking color. And Chris was so excited, and so he brought it out to the range. And the third shot that he fired, the locking block cracked.
Oh!
Broke. And so he had this gun that he could do nothing
take backs.
With. Yeah, because he couldn't he couldn't do anything with he couldn't get the part. And I think he finally, after about 2 years, was able to hunt one down.
Yeah, that's. I just interviewed Cindy Thomas, who's a competitive shooter. She's part of USPSA?
USPSA.
Yeah, she's one of the three on the team, females or whatever.
Four Sphinx?
For Sphinx. She's been shooting the – Todd Jarrett was her mentor, or still is.
Okay.
And he said, get the Sphinx. She did. She's put 25,000 rounds through it and not one single breakage. And
that
she said it was
– a lot.
She says it's really good there was not one single breakage because if she had had one, there are no spare parts. It was pretty much – it becomes a paperweight at that point. So she was very happy with it. This year at SHOT Show, I got to be introduced to the Sphinx, and they've just released the SDP, and it is a medium size, about the size of a Glock 19, and it is geared toward law enforcement, self-defense. It is a 9mm double stack. It is awesome. Let me tell you a little bit about the Sphinx. It's a reworked CZ-75. That was their original idea back in the 90s. They took the CZ-75 and they said, okay, what can we tweak on this and make it awesome? And they tweaked a lot of different parts. And now they're moving into cheaper made. You know, every piece was hand fit back then and all that. Mm-hmm. Now they're moving into mass production. And the really bizarre thing about this gun, it feels great in the hand. I got to shoot it at SHOT Show, really loved it. And then I got to test one recently. Mm-hmm. The really bizarre thing is the slide is steel, and it only sits up just barely above the frame.
Right, but that's classic CZ-75.
Okay, and I've not had 75 before. The frame, the top of the frame, is aluminum. The grip on the frame is polymer. So you got steel, aluminum, polymer, all three on one gun. And I had never seen that before, and my first thought was, this ain't going to work. This is going to break pretty quick. And actually, it worked great.
Cool.
All right, so we'll get more into this here in just a minute. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Over Texas. So, Travis, we were talking about the Sphinx.
Yes.
The new model Sphinx.
Yes, not the 3000, but the SDP, yes.
Okay, so is this just a shrunk-down version?
Now, maybe it's because Larry was here. Never mind.
Is this just a shrunk-down version of the 3000?
I think so.
Kind of like the 19 to the 17?
That would be my guess, because I've never shot the 3000. I've never even touched one of the 3000s, and very few people have. I'm going to say it's actually, maybe actually, judging from the pictures I saw of Cindy Thomas shooting hers, I'm going to say it's actually maybe very close to the same size.
That guy?
No, that's the subcompact. It's okay. Not been released yet. It's going to be released hopefully later this year, probably okay. The end of the year, or maybe the beginning of next year. It's the other one, which is a midsize, about the size of a Glock 19. And okay. I think the 3000 was about that size also. Anyway.
Okay, so we're looking at a hammer-fired gun.
Yes. It is hammer-fired. The magazine.
Double action, single action?
Double action, single action. It's got a bobbed hammer, mm-hmm. so which is good for concealment and all that kind of stuff. But it does have serrations on top of the hammer. So if you push your thumb up there, you can actually thumb the hammer back and go single action right from the first shot. Which when I was testing it, that's what I did because I was trying to do precision shooting. Mm-hmm. And it had very – I'm used to night sights and all that. This doesn't have night sights on it. The sights were dark. My target was dark. And it was dusk by the time I got to shoot it. And it was doing, you know, at 15 yards, I was doing – 2.5-inch groups, whatever, which is decent.
That's not bad.
Not bad. It's it for a combat gun. But I thought, yeah, you know, I think I can do better. So I got some white targets. I got. I went back to the range around noon. It was freezing, and it was like wind gusts of 25 mile an hour. But I was dropping groups down to like 1.5 inches, 1 inch on some of them mm-hmm. at 15. It was very. It was a tack driver.
You know where the weather's always good and the lighting's always right?
Your basement?
Shiloh indoor shooting. Yeah, well, my basement is where you put the lotion in the basket, and it's kind of dark down there. So.
Well, I would love to
never go to Jason's house without a black light.
and a handcuff key hidden yes. somewhere on your body. I would love to go to Shiloh shooting range to test it. The only problem is I doubt anybody there wants me to set up the chronograph and go up and down.
We will make space for you.
You'll make space
for
me?
Of course.
Okay. All right.
Of course.
Well, I may have to start coming and doing that in the middle of the night or something, shooting where I don't interrupt everybody else.
And heck, if you come on a Monday, if you let me know you want to do it, and
yeah?
you know, we can get together on a Monday when it's closed, and we can you know make a video for Guns Over Texas, too.
Oh, that'd be very cool. I've actually tested some of my guns at your range. I've had two different 9mm SMGs. One was made by CMMG, and the other one was made by Lone Wolf Glock Carbine, and they both shot great at your range. And the other thing I've tested at your range was the Unity Tactical Atom Slide, which is a replacement slide for the Glock, mm-hmm. and you can put red dot sights on it. And I had a couple of different yeah. – I had the Aimpoint Micro on it, and I also mm-hmm. put the Leupold Delta Point on it. And
so it's like the Smith & Wesson Core in that it comes – basically it's a slide that's already pre-milled for everything.
That's exactly what it is. You know, like FN is making – which pistol is it that's already got the slot for
– the FN 45X.
Yeah. FNX 45.
FNX,
FN
yeah.
45.
Yeah. Well, this is basically – and you know what? I honestly think Glock will probably do this, and most companies will start doing this. Mm-hmm. Because once you shoot a pistol with a red dot sight on it.
Especially once you get used to it. Because that's you know the discussion yes. we've had over and over again mm-hmm. is that a lot of guys will say that it doesn't matter inside of 10 meters.
I would probably agree with that.
Yeah. But that's just it. I spent enough time on it that.
It does?
I think it does. I think it does. The deal is that it takes a while to get used to bringing the gun up so that you're back on the irons.
Yes. Well, the thing that I found was if you punch straight out
right.
and you punch that pistol straight toward your target, man, that dot just magically appears
yes.
and it's fast and it's quick and it's mm-hmm. easy.
And from target to target.
And from target to target.
Absolutely.
But you've got to be
You got to drive the gun.
You got to drive the gun.
Yeah.
And you can't be off a little bit or the
right.
dot just disappears.
Right.
And people who were – I had a lot of people, different people shoot it and a lot of different level of shooters. Mm-hmm. And guys who had not practiced consistently driving a gun were searching for that sight and they were really
right.
slow.
Right.
The thing that was really awesome about it was I went ahead and tested it at 50 yards and I put an 8-inch
steel.
It wasn't steel. It was actually
just a dinner plate.
Shoot and see target uh-huh. out there. Birchwood Casey sends me targets for free, so I gotta you know, get a little thing. So I throw out.
Stop showing off.
They're like, I got like $3 worth of targets for free, so you guys should be jealous. anyway, I put that up there and I did it 50, and it was that same cold day I was shooting the Sphinx, uh-huh. and consistently could hit 8-inch $150, no problem.
Yeah. Now you're going to make me have to spend another $500 per gun now to throw a freaking sight on top of my $500 gun.
That was the problem that I had. Was
the sight costs more than the gun?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, yeah, absolutely.
You've got $500 in the sight, and then $150 to mill it and put it in, unless you
Which
buy a gun setup.
Doesn't for it. Bother yeah. me on the rifle, and I don't know why it bothers me on the handgun, but I know that red dot. Out at 100 yards, it makes the rifle just a joy to shoot.
It does.
Have no issue dropping 500 on a rifle sight. Pistol sight, it just, I was like,
Well, if you're looking.
Because I haven't ever been missing with a pistol. I don't look at it as like, well, it's not like I'm not hitting as is.
And I hit well, from the 50-yard line with my Glock, I can hit 4 out of 5 from the 50 on
I
the
think
silhouette,
it's
no
you're
problem.
Still young enough that you can see your front sight.
But I tell you what, I can drill tacks with it. If you haven't checked out Unity Tactical's Atom Slide those guys are awesome. The only bad thing about it is if you buy one, you're looking at almost a year waiting period, unless they've increased manufacturing recently. But it's if you've never had a chance to shoot a pistol with a red dot sight, it is awesome at distance.
Well, I would love to say that Gaston would be doing that, but if they did, I see it would only be – I'm just envisioning it would be on the 34-35 series just because that's their competition to begin with. And I can't see it really spreading down to the other guns. For some reason, there's a lot of demand for guns that Glock won't put out. Like the 19 chopped down to a 26 grip. They call it, the 26 long slide, basically, or a 17 slide on a 19 frame. There's a lot of demand, and a lot of aftermarket companies do that.
Sure.
Glock could sell them straight from the factory. It would cost them nothing to retool to do that, and yet they don't. So
we got away from the Sphinx.
Sorry.
How many rounds did you get to put through it? Did you get to spend some time behind it, or was it a quick?
It was a quick, and the biggest reason being I have to buy my ammo for the review, and if I spend a lot of time putting ammo down, rounds downrange, pretty soon I am losing money on the review, and I'm trying to make money on the review.
Understandable.
So I don't get to shoot nearly as much as I'd like to with them. I'm going to say I probably put 200 rounds through it.
Okay. So compared to, say, a Glock 19.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we looking at about similar size?
Very similar size.
How about weight, since it's got aluminum and polymer?
I'm going to say it's probably a little bit lighter.
Really?
Yeah. And it's ergonomically, and I'm a Glock guy, it's ergonomically way better. It just feels a lot better.
Well, that doesn't take much.
It's true. It's got three different back inserts that you can change, but, I mean, the medium size, I couldn't believe for a double stack how small the grip was. It was, as you guys
well, if you
think
about
see,
it,
I don't
you
have
look
the
at a Glock, you don't, when you're not wrapping all that plastic around the magazine, that's a couple millimeters right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And these magazines are they're metal magazines instead of that. And they didn't say this. They're MechGar magazines. I looked at them. You could immediately
Seems to be MechGar makes almost everybody's
and they,
magazine.
SIGs,
anyway.
They make everybody's. Yeah. Nobody says that, but they do.
Yeah, the M&P uses MechGar magazines. Yeah. So.
And the magazines work great.
Yeah.
And why is it SIG magazines, SIG MechGar magazines suck so much worse than everybody else's MechGar magazines?
Because SIG designated the spec. But if it's a MechGar mag that's a MechGar mag for a SIG, those things will run just fine.
Now, are you talking about the fact that on a quiet night you can actually hear a SIG magazine rust?
I was going to say.
Drop one on the floor and they explode. Our M&P mags do not explode.
No. Our issue SIG mags are the manganese phosphate. They're the dull finish. They don't rust. I've never had a problem with the issued guns we have. Now, when I bought that SIG from you, it came with a SIG mag that was polished to a super high. It almost looked like a glass-like polish. And like you said, within about 2 weeks of it sitting in the safe, unused, it rust. Sitting in my safe, not being touched.
And it probably, if it was one of those that has the flat base plate that's that's the same material, same shiny material, the corners on those are so freaking sharp that you can
And I know you know because you were a
thumb to pinky finger.
You were a this SIG fanboy when I first met you.
Say,
that's why.
Yeah,
so he learned, though. He learned.
I've come a long way in a long amount of time.
And my favorite story from Jeff, and this is not to put you on the spot, but I remember when I first met you and you're like, man, I've got the SIG, the single action only 45.
Right.
I've got this one and that one.
Which is still one of my favorite guns.
I know, but then you said, and then I went to a course and actually shot it for 1,000 rounds. Uh-huh. And now I don't want it anymore. Well, it was really great to look at and handle and to feel and to carry,
and
but when I actually actually had to use and decock between each station and move with it and deal with it
and
from
deal
an
with
actual
two trigger presses.
Yeah, right. When you actually had to put it to the test, long term, hardcore, you said no.
And then dropping the magazines on the ground and watching them blow up all over the place and trying to figure out where in the heck my springs are outside.
You remember?
Jeff, I actually did the same thing. I switched from Glock to the Sig P220 for raids, and I used the P245, which they don't make anymore. Now they call it the P220 short or
something like that.
Something
yeah,
like
220P
that.
Or something.
Carried that for every day. Loved them. And then we changed our course of fire, and it became a little bit faster. And I put myself on the pack timer because I was having trouble making the times. And I tell you what, having that long, and I mean long, hard first trigger press.
Mm-hmm.
Got old real quick. And I went back to the Glock.
Yeah, why I got away from the DAK and went to a Glock. I mean, I'm happier now. Now, I was going to say, as floating magazines, I know your old agency used to issue the UMP N40. Did you ever drop one of those magazines on the ground?
We did not have the UMP N40. No. You're talking about Border Patrol.
Yeah.
I did not. They came out with those after I'd left.
Okay. I've seen a few of those. The test video for what the problem is with them, and they dropped a couple of those guns where it's like, okay, the gun's loaded. If for some reason it dropped off the table onto the floor, magazines explode left and right.
All right. Now
they say that the answer is don't drop your gun, but that's not a realistic answer. It happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I've done that with the Colt SMG magazines so many times that you drop because they're double stacked. It's an Uzi magazine. It is, and it's really cool. There's one of two things happens when you hit that. It has that rainbow arc of rounds as they come out of it. 32 rounds magically shoot out of the top of it. The other really awesome thing is when you're getting down on the prone and you scrape off the bottom plate of the magazine and it goes, you hear this ping, and then the spring shoots out, hopefully not putting out your eye, and then 32 rounds drop very slowly out of the bottom of it, but both of them unload equally.
and sadly enough, I tell these stories at different shooting things I go to, and there'll be at least one HK fanboy and everyone going, "That doesn't happen." Yes, it does. I've watched it happen. No, it didn't. Okay, whatever. But because you played Call of Duty on Xbox, you know exactly how the gun functions in the real world.
Now they're not even making the UMP anymore, are they?
It was supposed to replace the MP5, and we've all seen how that didn't.
It just didn't work.
It just didn't happen.
I talked to just said the recoil on the UMPs was just so much more.
It's not a delayed roller lock like the original MP5. It's an inertial bolt, which means it's a 3-pound, and I'm not joking, it is a 3-pound bolt.
Wow.
That has a shot in it. It's a dead blow hammer. It's a 3-pound dead blow hammer that bounces back and forth with each shot.
And beats you up.
I was all excited when I got one and I had to try one out for a day or two. And after a day or two, I'm like, I don't want it. Take it away from me.
It hurts.
Very underwhelmed. Yeah.
So as we complain, or as I complain about the two different trigger presses on the SIG, the Sphinx is a DASA also.
It is.
How was it? The double action versus the single action.
I put it on the trigger test. It was an 11-pound double action. It was a 5.5-pound single action, but it didn't feel that heavy. It felt a lot lighter. Mm-hmm. And talking to the guys at the factory, they said that's going to lighten up.
Yeah.
They said we'll get it down, but that single action will be down to 3 pounds. He says it'll, and I believe him. I mean.
It kind of reminds me of the CZP 07 and P 09 and the fact that that is a really nice double action trigger. Mm-hmm. I can shoot that in double action all day long, yet I grab a SIG off the wall and I pull that double action. I go, can't wait to get through this to get to that single action.
The sweet single action. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. One of the interesting things was like on a Glock, the trigger bar coming back is only on one side.
Right.
This has it on both sides. Oh. Now, does the CZ have it on
yes,
both?
Yes, the CZ does.
Okay.
All right, so how many rounds are we looking at in this model? 15?
It was 15-round magazine, yes.
Okay, cool.
You going to try to order some up?
On these?
That's the sticking point. I believe MSRP is around $1,200 or $1,300, but you can find them on GunBroker for about $1,000.
Okay. $1,050, something like that.
Yeah, so they're really proud of this.
They are proud of this pistol.
Not unlike the Sphinx 3000.
They're only a third as proud of this one as they are of the other one. But I tell you what, after talking to Cindy Thomas about hers and after shooting it, one thing I would say is if I was going to buy one pistol, if I had to have a pistol for raids, pistol for everyday carry, the kind of the Glock 19 size, that kind of thing.
And it's not a Glock 19?
And it's not a Glock 19, then, I would.
Consider it.
I would definitely consider it.
It's actually high praise knowing you.
Yeah, and I'm one of those guys that I'm pretty snobby about my guns.
No.
Yeah.
I've been accused of that once or twice.
I think all of us have.
I take my kill tape.
I believe we've been called gun snobs more than once on this show.
Well, rightfully so.
Yeah, well, no, we just aren't going to sugarcoat it. I mean,
if, like quality?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If it's not quality, we're not going
to smoke. And it doesn't have to be expensive because we like Rugers are inexpensive, and a lot of times they're those that Rugers
they
that we'll
may
like.
Look there's... like boat anchors, but they do work.
Pre-sharpened from the factory.
And they can be used as a boat anchor, too.
Yes.
Right? So it's a double function.
But there are Rugers that don't run. There's some Tauruses that might run. I'm sure that there's at least one out there that runs, but I've yet to meet it. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, the 24/7 actually ran the first time I saw one. The problem, of course, is we know that if you shake it with the safety on, it'll still go bang. So
I sat at Jeff's range at IDPA one night and watched one launch its recoil spring guide rod down range as it was shooting and lock up the gun.
Well, that was actually a defensive mechanism. When you run out of ammo, then it shoots the guide rod out of there and it puts out an eye. That's it.
Puts out an eye or distracts.
The replacement gun that came out for that one, when you're shooting that one, the slim stack, the PT-709, yeah. I think it is, the 709 came out to replace it, and I don't think that one finished the night either. So
that thing
two
is
for two.
Pure and utter garbage. Yep. The 709 is utter garbage. I see.
Lost count of the number of you
I
see.
I cannot describe how many times that gun, people have come out to the range and gone, this gun's not working. Why? And I just.
What's written on the side of it?
Well, interestingly, before we got started tonight, Jason mentioned that he had found someplace that had the Beretta 96Ds.
Yes.
And maybe we'll talk about that after the break.
Right. We're going to hit a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Texas, Houston. We're talking guns, gear, ammo, anything that'll go bang is on the table. You can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. So recently, it's been in the news about this nonsense smart gun in which somebody should be wearing a wristwatch or a bracelet that I'm sure will have to have a battery.
$1,600 gun plus a $400.
It's a 22.
Yeah, 22 caliber gun.
22 caliber,
it's cost $1,600 plus a $400 bracelet.
Yeah, and so...
And the bracelet doesn't come with a gun.
Correct.
So let's say Jason is at home with his smart watch on, and he has a heart attack, God forbid, and then somebody kicks in the front door to his house, and his wife goes to use his Armatix 22 caliber.
She's not
Fury
gonna be able to
defend herself. She cannot defend herself with
more realistically. I'm just not home one day, and I've got the bracelet on, and she has a bracelet too, but it doesn't match whatever outfit she's wearing. I don't know. You know, there's that rationale that the women would have. Oh, I'm going to a nice dinner tonight. I'm going to wear my nice gold watch, and I'm going to take off the plastic Armatix thing that I would normally wear because it doesn't match the dress I'm in. And now all of a sudden.
That means you can't take that gun with you.
Hey, does the bracelet say Live Strong?
No.
I was just curious.
What would JMB do?
The left is constantly saying, well, I don't know why you gun mongers and
who's
and
against
well,
safety?
You know what?
Who's against common sense?
We don't have
sense.
A problem with smart guns because the tracking point rifle, God knows that's a smart gun. Okay.
Yeah. And every one of us would love to have that.
It doesn't require a wristwatch for it to
right.
work. Yeah. Okay, now.
It's just a college education. Yeah. And a study.
Not only everything that we've rehashed time and time again, but the main problem with this gun is that the moment it's commercially available in the United States, all guns in sold in New Jersey within
and,
3 years.
Maryland and several other states.
Will
have and California.
To be smart guns.
Yeah.
So the company that wants to put it out is a German company, and they figure, hey, I'll corner the market. If I sell one of these in America, three or four states are going to automatically mean that I'm the only game in town
right.
for that
yeah.
gun. Now, they haven't gone back and said we're going to remove all the dumb guns from circulation, or classic guns, as I would call them. But
I like dumb guns. That's fine.
Yeah, well, it's going to follow that if we're making it mandatory that all guns sold here now have to be smart guns, and there's only a 22 caliber pistol. There is no shotgun, rifle, or subgun,
no
or anything.
Nothing
of a service caliber yeah. that's going to go with it, or shotguns or rifles. So you're going to be limited to just that 22 pistol in all these states. But you know what? All these old guns, they don't have any technology. And this is all about safety. It's about the kids.
Why would you not want
Why would you not want your children to have safety?
Here's to me, the ultimate hypocrisy is simply the question of, does law enforcement and military go after it? And I haven't met a single cop that was worth his salt that wanted this.
None.
I've never met any of them that weren't worth their salt that wanted this.
I can think of a couple that are dumb enough that they would go for it, but like I said, like a cop worth their salt.
So now I have, or I was perusing the truth about guns earlier today, or maybe the firearm blog, one of the two, earlier
today. I think they
today.
Both have posted
and
an article.
It turns out the other shoe has dropped.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A patent for a remote kill switch was filed in 2006 by Armatex. Mm-hmm. In other words, they have a patent to where, we've only got smart guns in existence, and for some reason we don't want anybody in the United States to be able to use their smart gun. I'm going to hit the kill switch.
Right.
Nobody's gun works.
Because it even says in the patent, satellite activated.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And not even, because my first thought was, they'll have something that, you know, drive around in the car and it jams anything in a 100-yard area or something like right. that. No, they're talking like cell phone technology,
blanket shut down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why would you not want that, you hate monger?
And here's the, I can see it. Police would love this because if there's an active shooter at a mall, they can just hit a button and shut down all guns in a 100-yard area around the mall. Well, yeah, that's great in theory, but you're assuming that the bad guy, A, has the smart gun, which he doesn't,
yeah.
and you're assuming that no one down the line will ever say, you know what, I'm just going to turn off everything anyway, because I'm New Jersey right. and I don't like you.
Right.
I mean, and you're not doing anything wrong. My gun just doesn't work in my house now. Yes, I can see a need for it, or a selling point to say we're going to save the children, or, we can shut down an active shooter immediately. But that's not
you
how it's going to get
down
used.
An active shooter immediately, just walk up and put a bullet in his brain.
Oh, I agree. But that's
and that's the problem. You actually might be the guy that was going to stop that active shooter. You may be shutting down
his gun.
And
right.
if the shooter's got a dumb gun,
a
really
dumb,
like,
yeah,
dumb
classic,
gun, a classic gun.
I like that too, dumb gun, because it only does what it's told. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it only goes off when you pull the trigger. It did exactly what it was told to do.
You mean a proper gun.
gun. Maybe we'll call it that.
Well, anyway, they have not mandated that you'd have to hand in your classic gun at this point, but you know
they
that's
haven't
coming.
Done
that's
it
coming.
Yet, but
that
you
would
know that's coming as
absolutely.
Soon as that's
the, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
But again, we come back to the same problem they're having up in Connecticut of come register your guns and nobody's lining up to do it.
Good for them.
It's faded from the news, and I don't think it's faded from the news because it's not still a problem up there with people not doing it. I think it's an embarrassment for the media to report the fact that everybody up there is just basically saying, hey, go pound sand. I'm not going to hand it in. I'm not registering it. What are you going to do?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because in the end, it comes down to there's just no physical way that law enforcement can go door to door.
Now, who was the company back in the 80s that had the ring?
Magna Trigger.
Yeah.
But
and
Magna Trigger.
A colossal flop.
Yes.
Well, Magna Trigger, that was something that you had a magnetic ring that you wore on your middle finger of each hand, and the revolver was set up with something basically where when you gripped the gun, the magnet would activate the springs to where everything would touch appropriately and the trigger could be pulled. The problem is, if you wore gloves or if you didn't have the ring on the left hand instead of right hand and you were trying to switch hands,
or if you had your grip was slightly off,
that was the whole thing. If your grip was more than a half inch off, like you just grabbed it on the fly and it was a really quick draw, gun didn't work about a third of the time.
Yeah.
But they were selling it as like for jailers or prison transport or something like that, where a gun grab was more. Now, this is also in the days before security holsters or before they really had a good SS3. It was just a simple thumb break and you hope for the best of being able to retain your gun. And I like the fact that they didn't go with, we're going to put more technology in the gun. They said, we're going to make a retention holster. And I'm still a huge fan of retention holsters. I mean, they're great to defeat gun grabs. But then you're not putting a battery and a computer and a mechanical device into the gun, which is something that can be overridden from a distance.
Still out there.
Is it?
Magna Trigger?
No kidding.
It's still out there. Tarnhelm.com is still selling the Magna Trigger system.
I imagine they're not selling a ton of them.
I bet they're swimming in cash.
$350 to convert the gun.
So you can make your gun a lot less reliable for only $350?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And $60 for each standard ring, yes.
Look at that. Or you could buy a Taurus for $350 and it wouldn't work half the time either.
Well, yes.
There has been no shortage of internet hate recently directed to Smith and Wesson military and police, because the Texas DPS said they were adopting it, and then they said, "Oh, we're not going to adopt it yet. There's going to be
they put it on hold for that one class." Yes.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of hate from SIG people directed towards Smith and Wesson. Well,
and there's the SIG pot calling the kettle black.
Yes,
unreliability.
Yeah. San Joaquin County, California, their sheriff's department had some malfunctions recently and had to replace 300 guns that were less than a year old. And those type, the gun in question, SIG Sauer P226, chambered in 40. The problem was a tiny pin that anchors a spring in place that helps reload the gun. And twice in recent weeks, the department's at the range, the pins failed, and the guns wouldn't reload. They said the officials don't think that all 300 guns they recently bought have a malfunctioning pin, but they didn't want to take any chances, and they had to...
I love the way the article's written, that it helps reload the gun when that has nothing to do with that Springer pin.
Yeah, I know. I said that, and I kind of, my butt puckered up when I said it.
Well, I was like, oh, he's reading the article. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. So that pin is actually mechanically press-fitted into the trigger, or the
frame.
Right?
It is, and the deal is, on if you ever owned a SIG, you'd notice that if you pulled the trigger and the hammer flies forward, the hammer strikes the firing pin, then the hammer actually bounces off and stays about an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch behind the firing pin.
Right.
So it never, if you drop the gun, the firing pin would not be contacted by the hammer, because the hammer actually does not rest on the firing pin. Mm-hmm. And it does this by what's called a rebound spring. Every time you pull the trigger, the hammer goes forward. On anything that's made after, I think, 92, 93, the rebound spring pops the hammer back a little bit. And
it even makes a little funny sound.
It does indeed. Yeah. It makes an even funnier sound when it goes pa-ding! and jams up the gun. But apparently that's what the problem is this little spring is held in place by a pin, and this pin is supposed to be, I believe it's supposed to be either a straight pin and they put in a taper pin, or it's supposed to have been held in by a taper pin and they actually put in a straight pin. Whatever pin they put in was not the pin that was supposed to be there, or it was made out of spec. And now the pin and the spring itself are popping out and jamming the gun to where the slide is locked and the hammer doesn't move.
Well, SIG is making good on it, and they're replacing all 300 guns. They've flown somebody out to San Joaquin to take care of that.
And this is not even to rag on SIG, because any company, and SIG, Glock, everybody, they make a million plus pistols a year. There's going to be 1% of anything you ever make. 1% is going to be messed up.
All right. Now,
or in Taurus' case, 20%.
Another case of internet vitriol has been directed at our good friend of the show and the guy whose career we helped to launch.
This
here
is
at
true.
Guns Over
and we
Texas,
can't get him to come back to us. I don't know.
Julian Noir of recent NRA fame. He's got his own show now, Noir.
Yes.
When is it on?
It's actually on right after we leave the air. It's on at 7 p.m.
I think he planned it that way.
I think
so.
So
you can go straight from Guns Over Texas Radio to Julian Noir's show, Noir. Now, you know, you would think that all these people, all these leftists that holler at us and call us racist and such, would actually support a black guy who's on the radio, who's on TV.
Mm-mm. Not if he's a right winger.
No, it's because, and he's not even necessarily a right winger.
No, he's not actually.
He's about gun rights,
right?
And so he's his new show. At the comments fields of left-wing sites like Reddit and
Gawker, you name it.
Think Progress. Right. Yeah, real progressive.
Well, Think Progress was really interesting. Their commentary was, I was like, it's really progressive thinking to say that he's
a porch monkey.
Yeah, I was going to say, they called him a porch monkey.
Bobo the Chimp.
Yeah.
These are all kinds of stuff.
I mean,
the fact
what rock do you have to live under?
And
of not
you're
knowing.
Quoting someone else. We'll throw that out.
Right. Yeah.
The shoes. Yeah.
Right. And, I think it's just the fact that they are terrified of the new face of the NRA, and that's a fashion-conscious black man with a law degree and a personality.
Agreed.
So, all right, we've got a lightning round going on here, so let's head on the line. Hugh and Tomball, welcome to Guns Over Texas. Fire away, Hugh.
Thank you. I want to ask your opinion on the Springfield XDS-9, the 4-inch, 7, and then it gets the extension of the 9. What are y'all thoughts on that?
Well, the 4.0, the XDS 4.0, it's got a full 4-inch barrel. It's got the same grip size as the normal 3.3-inch XDS, but it also comes with an extended magazine that makes it a 9+1 gun. You put that 9+1 in there, and there's no reason to carry it like that. You should just go ahead and carry a Compact XD or well, a Glock 19.
I would argue that there is, if you're somebody whose hands don't wrap around a 19 so well.
A single stack
it becomes a single stack.
Yeah. It's a long one.
Long grip. And the benefit of that chopped grip is that's what makes it easier to carry.
Agreed.
So when you put that thing in there, it becomes a really long grip.
It does.
And there's a lot more to hold on to than even on a 19.
Yeah, so but that's just it. If you're somebody who needs a single stack gun and you want a more of a full size gun, I can't really argue against it.
As a 4-inch gun with the chop grip, with the shortened grip, I think it's awesome. I really like it. I'm not a big fan of the XD series of guns, whether it be XD or XDM, although I shoot them really well.
Well, I know, and you said before that the only XD you would own would be the XDS.
Yeah.
You know?
But there are some differences between the XDS firing mechanism and the standard XDs.
You mean they fixed it?
That one works? You know, it may be. I don't know if it's got that goofball retaining pin that's
known to walk.
Yeah. The XDS does not have that sitting right on top.
Yeah.
And so I like it a lot better because of that. And while I still don't like the grip safety, because I just don't want one there. And if I have one there, I want it to be bigger and more pronounced so that I can really get my hand on it.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I was worried about too. So
yeah, that to me is the only drawback. You know, you're out there in Tomball, you could take it to a guy like Dale Honeycutt who could take some polymer out of there and make that a little bit, you know, easier to grab a hold of. But, you know, you get that fiber optic front sight. It's a really, really soft shooting gun. The 3.3 is a really soft shooting gun. The 4.0 is a pleasure to shoot.
What's the throw on the trigger like?
It's nice. You know, it's rated at 5.5 pounds.
I've never had any complaints about the XD's trigger. It's really not bad. It's the fact that when they break. Yeah, the problem is if the gun goes down, you can never find parts for it. They don't support you well. You have to mail everything in.
Right.
That's always been our biggest complaint with the XD is not even the way the gun runs, because every gun can break. But if my Smith & Wesson breaks, I can find parts from 30 different places and fix it in an hour. If my Glock breaks, I can find parts anywhere and fix it in an hour. If my XD breaks, I got to mail it off and wait 6 to 8 weeks, and maybe they'll get it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big problem.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Nittleman. Appreciate it.
Hey, you're on the right track. So if you want to try one out, you can come over to Shiloh Shooting Range. Talk to Chuck on Thursdays and Fridays and Sundays. He's got his. He'll let you try it out, I'm sure.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Hugh.
Bye-bye.
All right, fellas. It's the last couple minutes of the show. Y'all got anything to finish it off with? All eyes to
Travis.
The new guy.
We all look to Travis.
Yeah, we all look at him like, he's looking through his notes.
Tell you what, give a shout out to Tactical Firearms. They've had a sign that went viral recently, and it's been on just about every website, every gun-related and every anti-gun website around.
Because it was a true statement.
Yeah, exactly. I like my guns like Obama likes his voters, undocumented. So, good job on going viral with that. I hope you have lawyers ready to go for the team of IRS agents that's going to come out for you. But there's a lot of money at that place, so I'm sure they'll be good to go. All right, Houston, that was 2 hours down of Guns Over Texas. If you don't have your CHL yet, get it now, and you can get it at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, 2 for $150. Come join us on Wednesday night for Defensive Handgun at 7 p.m. $50, 200 rounds. Larry Ryland, 18 Bravo, will be your instructor. That's it for us this week, Houston. Shoot straight.